background behind
Should
you.
Should I do something to fix that? Or,
let's
or
just
you want to
get
come
over
here?
I'll get over here. Yeah. Okay. So who are you?
So my name is Steve Ball. I'm a lead program manager in the digital media division, and I've been hovering around Microsoft since about 1994, when one of my best friends was hired away from Sony Pictures to come be an audio director at Microsoft as part of the Blender. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
No.
That. I won't go into that whole thing. I've been around for a while. I'm a serial entrepreneur, done 4 startups, and I consider my job at Microsoft to be entrepreneurial. And I have a team, an audio video, a core audio video team in the digital media division, and we deal with all the audio video plumbing that makes sound and pictures show up on the Windows desktop.
So you're responsible for channel
9. Indirectly, we have the potential to make channel 9 look bad and sound bad. Yeah. My team also owns the Windows Audio Video Excellence Initiative, formerly known as Glitch Free. So we are working on systems and services with the core team to essentially make better performance happen for audio and video playback.
Now, when I see these green leaves or grass, uh-huh. I know you're a Windows Vista guy, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I just got Vista running on my older Toshiba laptop.
And, excellent.
Aside from a few driver issues, it actually seems to be pretty good. Both are Beta 2 builds, and most of our features that you can actually see and hear and touch are in Beta 2, although our team also essentially took the entire kernel mode audio stack out of Windows and replaced it with the user mode audio stack in Beta 1. And the good news is, no one will know about it unless something goes wrong. But we have a much more stable, reliable, finally, low latency, high fidelity audio system in Windows that will give us a huge competitive advantage compared to where we were with XP. So, but I'm super
excellent.
Proud of our team.
Now this video is probably going to go up the morning of the PDC, right?
Okay.
But we're about a month away from that.
Okay.
So we're trying to guess what you're going to announce or what Bill Gates is going to announce on your behalf the morning of the keynote.
Yep. Well, it's always a last-minute guess at what's going to go into the keynote, but we may end up seeing some interesting things in the keynote that will show off some of the stuff we're doing. But I'm super excited about one feature in particular that I've been working on personally for about 4.5 years. I used to work for Hillel Cooperman and worked on Neptune for a year as well. Joe Belfiore.
What is Neptune?
Neptune was an experiment that happened in the Windows Shell team in 1999, where a group of about 40 people essentially developed an alternative desktop using some alternative technologies whose names I won't mention. But we were trying to divorce ourselves from the idea that we were stuck on old UI metaphors. And a lot of what you saw in MSN8 and a lot of what you see in Longhorn comes from some of the same thinking that went into Neptune.
Right.
Inductive UI came out of some of
When you say inductive UI, what do you mean by that?
Inductive user interface is the process by which you can lead a user to solve a problem in simple, digestible chunks. Okay. Instead of putting up some giant screen that has a 400-step process, like if you take a look at what it takes to bring a new employee into Microsoft, this is pretty good. Color coding, a little checklist. Inductive UI would be what it would take to make this turn this into a wizard, where you could do one step at a time and kind of confirm that you're having success at accomplishing your task for day one or day two or week one or week two.
Got it.
As you go. What we've traditionally done in Windows UI over the years is shovel a bunch of features in and hope that users can figure out how to use them, which is why Office has 100 menus and 1,000 options, and why most normal people complain about how hard it is to use computers. But what we've done is taken a lot of the thinking that went into projects like Neptune or Money was the first project that used inductive UI in their core user interface, where we're trying to give users very simple language to help them figure out how to accomplish the goal that they have and do it in a way that's not intimidating and that doesn't make them feel stupid.
Yeah.
And so one of the key features my team's been working on for 4 years is, it sounds a little mundane, but it's actually pretty cool, desktop volume control. Maybe for reference, let me show you what we're building on and where we're coming from in Windows XP.
Okay.
Let me close my ridiculous calendar and my stuffed inbox and show you just as a baseline. This is the way volume control works in Windows XP. If I've got a problem to solve, I launch this little thing called SoundVol 32, which also, ironically, disappears when I get an email message. So there's some kind of complexity here, but this volume control is what most users use to, when you're in a meeting or when you have an emergency situation, come in and quickly mute your device. And God forbid what would happen if you double-clicked on this thing and tried to actually turn down your notifications compared to, let's say, some music playback.
Right.
You get this volume control that has kind of some weird labeling, like, all right, this is a volume control, but it's got this wave, software synth, 3D depth, a CD player. I don't really know what any of these things are. I'm an engineer at Microsoft. I don't actually know what most of these things are in this component that my team shipped 10 years ago. And the kind of common scenario is, you know, I'm playing music, and I have a new mail notification that comes in that may sound like this. And today we have no simple way for users to adjust or fix the scenario where they hear notification sounds or sounds that come from a random app compared to media playback. So one of the primary things we've done in Windows Vista is rethink this entire UI from the ground up. In fact, we built a new audio engine from the ground up where the user interface to adjust or to control what happens in a scenario where you've got, let's say, some media playback that is cranking. Oops, let me see. Hopefully this will work. And of course, since I'm in demo mode, something will probably go wrong. I'm going to simulate a scenario here where I'm getting new mail constantly. So I'm using an old Windows Media Player to just sort of play back a shell sound of new mail pumping along constantly. I also then want to, let's say, play some music. And in Longhorn, we are shipping some UI that makes it a little bit easier for users to figure out what is going on with their audio when they want to troubleshoot a mixing problem. For starters, we have a new device control. We're making it very clear there's a difference between controlling the audio that goes out to your device and controlling the audio that is coming from or being played back through an application. So we're putting a little teeny icon here showing that, oh, this is actually my speaker volume control. We've also built in some metering. I don't know if you can see it very well because the level is pretty low, but we've got metering built into the control itself so that users can say for the first time, oh, you know what, I'm seeing some activity in my channel, but if my device is actually muted, the metering actually continues, and you can't see it there because it's so low. This is actually a bug, but for the most part, the idea is we want to give users a graphical indication that something is going on in their audio path so that if this happens, in other words, I've got a little potentiometer on my speakers back here. If this happens, I can see that there's actually activity in my channel, but I can know and say, oh, you know what? Well, maybe it's my device out here that is the problem.
Got it.
And in the old volume control, you have no indication of what is going on. We've also built in some intelligence so that when we actually do a mute, we keep the metering going on so the fader is actually after the metering, and of course it's not showing up there very well.
Can
you see it? We gray out the metering. In fact, this is this meter activity and animation also gives you a much better experience. So the meter actually slides down and the volume ramps down. It's not just kind of a step function. But the more interesting scenario is if I've got this new mail pouring in, I'm listening to my music, we are also building in essentially an advanced application mixer so that for the first time, users will have the ability to turn up the volume of their Windows sounds compared to the volume of their Windows media player. So, if I am the kind of person who wants to actually have my notifications interrupt me so I can hear them over my media playback, I can set the relative levels of my application volume compared to all of my Windows sounds. And better yet, when I change the device volume, both sliders for my Windows sounds and my application move to show that there is, in fact, a relationship between the control and the application levels. And when I actually mute the device, we also then map the muting state back down into the applications as well, so there is, in fact, a relationship between the fact, oh, I'm not hearing any Windows sounds when my device is muted. And this is something that is a collaboration between our team and MS Research, and we patented this and wrote a paper for Kai a couple years ago called Flat Volume Control.
Okay.
But we think this is going to be, for the first time, a piece of innovation in Windows that's going to solve a primary problem that people have had for years about frustrating inability to control precisely relative volumes between applications and the shell.
Now the geeks are going to set that off there.
Yep. Okay.
The geeks are going to want to know, are there keyboard equivalents for each of these?
Absolutely. Or? There's HID controls built in for all of this. It's also accessibility friendly, and there are localization is localization friendly as well.
Okay.
So there is in fact an effort. Even we had a Jim Alchin review of this feature a couple weeks ago, and Jim is also going to try and help us drive with the logo program the ability to, let me show you on this laptop, the ability to read the state of this analog potentiometer on the side of my device so that this would actually, for the first time, map into and control this device slider. Because right now these are disconnected, and when the user actually has this in volume potentiometer in a state where it's off, again, it's a common user problem where you don't know what is up with the actual state of your system.
Okay.
So we're working to make the entire end-to-end system from application rendering audio to the audio experience out to the device seamless and intuitive and also customizable.
Now, is there a new API so developers can call into this stuff and control it from their applications?
Yes and no. What we don't want is we don't want applications to come in and control the device volume.
Okay.
This device control is actually a user control.
Okay.
If applications actually had the ability to change this, so you could get into some weird unknown states, or it also opens up some security holes. But for the most part, applications will have the ability to sync up the media player control, for example, to the media player's own slider. This isn't working today, but in beta 2, by the time this PDC video shows to the public, these two sliders will actually always be in sync. So when I change the media player volume in the app, and when I change this media player volume in the shell, they will be and stay in sync.
Okay. You can put that in mute again.
Yes, okay, sorry to annoy everyone.
The reason I was asking is I could have an instant message application, and I might want to, you know, when my son, for instance, calls me, to reduce the volume of everything else going on in my system.
Yep.
You know, so I might want to control the relativity of audio, and I wonder if there's an API for that.
There is. We actually, one of the things that we've built into our new user mode audio engine is something we also call the audio policy engine, and we haven't, we're not exposing a ton of these features in Longhorn, but we do have things like the ability to sniff full screen mode when you're playing an app on full screen, and we can do things like intelligently mute all other applications besides the application that has kind of the full screen control.
Right.
We also have the ability, if you accept a phone call or if you have a communicator, does this today. If I pick up the phone and do a phone call and I play back media in XP today, my media playback will pause.
Yeah.
And so we have the ability in our audio policy engine to have intelligent interaction between applications, and it could even be doing a transport control to pause the media or just mute it or take it down 20 dB. So there is a bunch of potential that we have in the future generations of Windows Vista that will make intelligent policy-based adjustments or interactions possible between apps, but in the end, we feel like most of these features are things that users are going to want to customize based upon whether they're meeting, what their preference is, and what their devices are that they're trying to drive, and that's something that we can't even pretend to be able to anticipate,
right?
At least with today's
now,
technology.
I've heard in the halls that you guys are working on something called glitch-free audio, and I think you'd mentioned it when you first started. What does that mean? When you say glitch-free, what do you mean by that?
Well, Robert, first of all, this is the last time I hope that anyone will ever hear the words glitch-free out of my mouth, because we do have an initiative on my team called Windows Audio Video Excellence. In fact, let me walk you out to the hall for a second to show you the poster.
Cool.
Windows Audio Video Excellence is the new rebranding and public name of what we used to call the Glitch-Free Initiative.
Okay.
And this is coming to a Longhorn machine, should say Windows Vista machine, near you in Beta 2. And essentially, the Windows Audio Video Excellence Initiative is a bunch of features and services built into Windows Vista that gives us the ability in the OS to provide resilience to performance and resource problems in the OS. So
now speaking English.
Okay, speaking English, we're going to give
For my mom, what does that mean?
That means we're going to give you better audio and video performance and playback so that when you're watching a full screen video, you're going to have amazing fidelity that competes with consumer electronics devices. When you're listening to an audio stream on your Windows Vista machine, the audio will not have little dropouts or glitch when you launch PowerPoint or glitch when you run into some other activity that you're trying to do in the foreground while you're listening to your music. So we've built in some core services with the kernel team to essentially develop a set of priorities around playing back media and capturing media in a way that's intelligent and also gives users the ability to have better fidelity, performance, and reliability for their media playback and capture.
Now, is that going to be true even if I have a rogue app that's taking up all the processor on my machine?
Yes and no, and that one of the reasons why I've wanted to get away from the name glitch free is that, and we do this at Microsoft all the time, we overpromise and we underdeliver, and we have a program, for example, called Plays for Sure. Anytime we name something in a way that implies a promise and something will never break, the minute something glitches, and it could be that the glitch may be the time it takes for me to launch an application. This may be perceived as a user glitch. How long does it take for me to open the start menu or get to all my programs? Just to me, right there, that was a glitch.
Yeah.
As soon as we call anything at Microsoft glitch-free, we're setting ourselves up for failure. So I worked pretty hard with both marketing and got some pushback about the idea of getting rid of the name glitch-free and talking about media resilience and talking about fidelity and reliability. So in a way, I feel like we do ourselves a disservice by naming things in a way that promises these aspirational or sets these aspirational expectations, but when it boils right down to what we deliver and what's possible, even in a modern OS on a 3 gigahertz machine, we have resource contentions. Users are trying to do 20 things at the same time. There's background services and processes over which we have no control. On top of that, there are devices that users can plug in that might have, sorry, Mom, long DPCs and ISRs, or processes underneath built into the hardware that might interrupt our ability to smoothly render audio and video. So we cannot, by any stretch of the imagination, guarantee that we will never, ever have a glitch in Windows performance or in the new Aero Glass desktop. We are occasionally going to have some hiccups and performance problems, but you know what? We have some professionals who are dedicated to the idea that Windows someday might actually be glitch-free, that we might actually be able to nail the performance infrastructure in a way where we can guarantee reliably that your system will be rock solid, never require reboot, never blue screen. But in the meantime, we are doing some baby steps towards making just your media more resilient to problems with resources in the system.
Now, the other question I have, and now that the world is going into more of an audio-video world, is there any way to have it record everything on my machine and record that to a WAV or a WMA file or something like that?
Actually, there is an amazing product called OneNote.
You can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Back, I want to have the ultimate podcast.
In fact, there's a number of projects going on inside the company right now. One by Gordon Bell called My Life Bits, where Gordon's...
We've interviewed him.
Yep, you probably know the routine, but the basic concept is you want to be able to capture everything that happens in your life and suck it into some publishable format that people can consume externally, much like you do every single day, Robert.
Yep.
And there's another project going on over in this, the WinFS team by a guy named Shane Williams, where Shane has developed a timeline-based viewer where you can look at 100 years worth of stuff and zoom into yesterday, zoom out to last month. So there are a number of people working on initiatives where...
We're interviewing him, so hopefully we'll have the WinFS team up for...
Yeah. Shane and I collaborated for a couple years trying to evangelize the idea of timeline views in the OS, and we did 4 patents last year. Actually, some of those cubes are around the idea of visualizing large timelines full of stuff. And so there are definitely groups in the company who are working on figuring out how do you deal with the 8 hours of video that you capture every day, and how do you pull out the parts that are significant, or even more interesting, how do I search for the stuff that I care about within your 8 hours of stuff and pull out the 3 minutes that matter to me when my calendar looks the way it does. So when I look at the next 10 years or 15 years of computing, I get super excited about visualizing better audio-video device control, but this is just scratching the surface in terms of the kinds of simplification that I think people working on Windows Vista have as potential next-generation features. And I get super excited when I think about the fact that once we have a stable platform, once we have all the raw pieces in place, eventually Avalon, Indigo, WinFS, all under this new WinFX platform, the kinds of innovations that we're going to see both from Microsoft and from our partners, I think it's just going to change the way people think about computers. And this thing, to me, I think of this as DOS. This is like DOS 6.0. And the question I ask my PM team, my dev team, and our biz dev team pretty regularly is, if this is DOS 6.0, what does Windows 95 look like built on this?
Yeah.
And that gets me super excited.
Okay, let's talk about Windows 95.
Okay.
Sound recorder.
Yes.
Are we going to have the same old sound recorder in Windows Vista?
No, I'm happy to say, again, after 3 years of evangelism and working with four different teams to try and replace SoundRec 32, the Movie Maker team under Ian Mercer and Chris Hugel and Linda Averett have committed to and are shipping a new sound recorder called the Audio Recorder. I have a little screenshot on my door. Hey, Larry, don't go far. Please come back here, in fact.
Okay.
Hey, there's Larry.
Larry Osterman. You walk by our hallway, we have a lot of celebrities just hanging around.
I'll take your word for that, but
this is Larry Osterman, 20-year Microsoft veteran.
Yeah, we've had him on channel before.
Larry is, in fact, on the dev team.
Before we get to Larry, show me the sound recorder.
All right, quick screenshot here. This is Windows 95. This is going on 10 years old technology. It's used all over the world to capture little audio clips and save them on your hard drive. It has a few little problems, though, in that it has a one-minute limit, and it only saves or records to WAV files. So after about a three-year evangelism process by Larry and our team, we are actually within DMD shipping a replacement called Audio Recorder that finally captures and supports WMA. It's one of the goals was to have zero file management as part of the sort of user experience, so you can hit a button and stop it, and it'll dump the file out, and you won't have to worry about where it went or how to find it or get back to it.
Wow.
And the goal, again, is do simple...
What other formats does it support?
Mostly WMA, but all the standard PCM as well. But we want people to actually take advantage of the fact that you can store about a year of WMA files on a standard hard drive today and not even come close to filling the thing up. So, Robert, you could go out and record your entire life for a year using this little utility. Just keep it running 24/7, and your 60-gig hard drive wouldn't barely even notice. So,
all right.
One of the big
I'll try that out. That sounds like a beta chore. Just leave the media player going.
We want to stay out of the editing process, too, because going back to the My Life Bits thing, one of the big challenges is how do you deal with, you know, a year's worth of audio?
Yeah,
how do you search with a year's worth of video? So, again, the infrastructure that Larry and company have built.
Now, is that going to be in the PDC? Is that going to be demonstrated at the PDC? Or
I'm not sure if it'll be demoed or not. It depends if Bill G finds the new sound recorder replacement interesting enough to become part of PDC. But again, our team does some of these little utility features that, if you think about it, they aren't kind of the mainstream Office and Word or IE kinds of things that you use every single day. However, most people do interact with volume control pretty regularly, every time you go into a meeting and get blasted out. And we're hoping that our team also owns the device infrastructure for things like microphones. We're hoping that we can unblock some of the long-time dream scenarios of being able to record a meeting and have the NRA mic actually pick up and distinguish between who's speaking and automatically get rid of the background noise. And if you talk to the speech team, which I recommend if you haven't done it recently, go talk to Rob Chambers and company. I think the speech scenarios combined with an Array mic are going to blow people away.
Okay.
Being able to
Array mic, by the way, that my tablet PC has three microphones on it, right? That's what you're talking
about.
An
Array mic is a 3 or 4 or 5 element microphone that subtracts out the noise and gives you the ability with the speech engine to distinguish between when I say play Tori Amos with my voice instead of having to type on open windows and search in a library with 10,000 songs, to be able to keep typing my Word document and just say, play Tori Amos, and have Media Player know what I intend and launch Tori Amos. Yeah, there's an Array Mic prototype from the MS Hardware team.
Very cool.
Which I think we can show in public.
I don't know. I did not realize that this was a prototype. I assumed it was commercial hardware.
No, I believe it is a prototype.
Okay.
The MS Hardware team and Microsoft Research and our team have been collaborating on Array Mic support, native Array Mic support in the OS. So
very cool.
And the speech team and the RTC team. Talk about a cross-group nightmare. We're hoping that we can help unblock by exposure of and availability of Array microphones in things like tablets, the ability to integrate both speech for command and control and dictation, as well as just capturing a meeting in a way where you go into the meeting with OneNote or with Word, You hit the big record button, and you don't think about it later, and if you want to remember, Larry, I remember you committed to getting volume control done for Beta 2.
Done for Beta 2, and well, now you know.
Yeah.
Now it's proven.
Then you can actually find the text, do a text search, and find that Larry committed to it, and hold him to it 2 months later.
Very cool. So, speaking of Larry.
Yes, sir.
Let's shift gears.
What have you been working on for the last 2 years? Because last time we were here, you weren't allowed to tell me at all.
I wasn't allowed to talk about it at all. What I own is what they call the audio policy infrastructure. It's a horrible name, but what this essentially is that it's all of the infrastructure in the system around volume. Volume control, metering, providing the ability for a user to actually understand what's actually happening. So one of the key scenarios that we talk about, I don't know if Steve mentioned this, is the idea that, okay, why isn't it playing? Why can't I hear what's coming out? So we're trying to work out a way that the user can say, oh, well, media player is actually making noise. I have a visual indication on the screen that media player is making noise, but it's not coming out of my speakers. Why? What's gone wrong? And then there's the other half of, okay, why is media player so quiet, but all those stupid noises and dings that I get from the system, why are they so bloody loud? Why can't I fix this problem that I'm sitting here listening to media player on my headphones and I get a piece of new mail and all of a sudden, like,
my ears are gone. Yeah.
My ears are gone because that stupid new mail sound was just so bloody annoying.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we're doing and a lot of what we're building on is the whole ability to fix that, finally.
Yeah.
And there's actually a surprising amount of infrastructure to do to build that into the system. Because if you're going to do the ability to do the whole system sounds and whatnot, well, that's kind of pointless if you do that, if you don't also now take on building in things like, the ability to control. A control panel that actually lets you see what the various applications in your system are doing. How are they doing this? How are you making, well, you know, if you've got your system sounds really loud and media player really quiet, how do you adjust those? If you don't have the UI, you can't do that, which is part of why this whole, it gets back to the whole little applet things and all those pieces. And that's basically what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years, is basically building the infrastructure, or working with the rest of the team, building the infrastructure around getting us to the goal, which is allowing the user to have this level of control, which people have been asking for
years.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I gave a series of talks earlier, and I got like standing ovations when I said that we were finally putting in per app volume into the operating system, that it was going to be built in, baked in there. And it's built in, baked in, and it works on our current builds in our dev team. It's there, it's checked in, and, you know.
Coming for beta
2.
Very cool.
So.
Very cool.
So that's a quick overview. I think just to wrap it up, maybe I'll just walk down to Steve Smith's office too.
Okay. What are these, by the way, on the wall?
Oh, these are early sketches, PMware, for the new sound control panel, where we went from a very early kind of napkin sketch for trying to figure out what the primary tasks that users need to access for dealing with volume control, setting their sounds, dealing with speech and accessibility. So these are very early sketches to help us figure out how to help users navigate out to the little system tray, or the new system control area for launching the volume control, to just very quickly mute or turn off a device, or to go launch into the per app volume that Larry was just talking about, or to go down and actually change their window sounds. And we're reorging this screen as well to let users, instead of having asterisks show up as the first sound, because we do an alphabetical sort, we're going to change the user experience around letting users select and customize their Windows sounds.
So who did these?
This is mostly my PMware.
Okay.
So it helps, again, to have a UI PM who's got a little bit of graphics and audio and video background as well.
Yeah. The original versions of these actually had strings attached. We had thumbtacks and strings where you'd draw, because the navigation is critically important. So we had this board filled with various different screenshots and all hand-drawn, and we had strings running from one to another. So, okay, you click on here, and there's the link. And as I said, it was this wild, I don't want to call it a web, because it was a much simpler than that, but it was like all of these strings running all across the words.
It's more like spaghetti.
It was a spaghetti meeting. It was really pretty wild watching them going up there and putting up all the pins.
So again, this is one of the ways we explore what we might do for Windows instead of working in Photoshop, is just start with paper and pencil first.
It's a heck of a lot faster to do paper and pencil than it is to actually build something in like Director or Photoshop or whatever.
Alan Cooper, in his book, says to do it on paper and pencil because when you do something in Photoshop, people buy into it and start thinking that it's real and can't be changed.
Where exactly.
With a paper and pencil sketch, you can
see. There's also a similar philosophy around the use of Director, and I don't know how many people know about the Longhorn Director demos that were sort of carted around the company 4 or 5 years ago, showing what the user experience could be. But we've built ourselves, a little bit like my glitch-free sermon a while ago, we build ourselves into a corner if we show off these user experiences that are totally crafted in Director, but if you actually have to translate that into something that you can build and have, you know, this kind of multi-purpose OS that actually performs like Director, you're setting yourself up for failure. So I'm a big believer in actually starting with paper, having human beings interact and design and change the design on paper, and then go straight to the development process and get design involved, of course, to clean up the pixels and stuff. But if you skip that whole Director step, you can kind of save yourself some headaches and heartaches later when you realize you'll never get the perfect out of Director.
When I joined the company, I was all hyped up because of the Director wear that I had been shown. Yep. And so,
Director wear is great for venture capitalists if you want to sell an end user experience. But you know what? In the end, our OSs, they're made from real bits, and we have to sell those first.
Well, at the PDC, the tools division is going to show off some new tools that let you build some new UI without going into Director, right?
Oh, right. So, yep. Yeah, so I've heard about
expression
that.
Expression and acrylic, So we'll have a whole series of videos on that, too.
So. But I do want to say one quick thing about Larry and his team. We have a pretty amazing core, dedicated audio and video dev team who... I think some of what is going to be surprising in Windows Vista is some of the quality and fidelity and kind of the low latency, high reliability media playback that people have been expecting and had from consumer electronics devices for years. But to be able to deliver that in Windows is a pretty new both innovation and platform for people to build on.
I don't know if Steve got into the fact that the reason why we could do per app volume, the whole reason we could do it was because about 3.5 years ago, the dev manager for the Windows Audio, Video, and Devices group decided to make a big bet. And he bet the world on a complete bottom-to-top re-architect of the audio engine inside of Longhorn. We knew this was going to take several years to do. I mean, it's taken 3.5, 4 years?
Yeah, almost 4 years.
Something like that. We've been working on building this thing, and we literally threw out every bit of audio infrastructure that we had, with the exception of the actual audio device drivers. We threw it all out. We threw every bit of it away, and we restarted from the ground up. We've built a whole brand new audio infrastructure, and the whole raison d'etre, I mean, per app volume is nice and all that stuff, but it's all about improving the fidelity of the system, because the reality is, if you talk to a pro audio person, the reality is that they're not very happy with the fidelity of Windows. I mean, it's fine for the vast majority of consumers. Most people who use audio don't actually realize, but the real hardcore audio development guys, the guys who really care about having a full fidelity audio pipe that goes from when their app starts rendering to when, so you're using SoundForge or some other sound editing app, when the bits that they put into SoundForge, they want that coming out the speaker.
Yeah.
And they couldn't really do that with the existing Windows audio architecture. So we said, okay, these guys are important. This experience is so important to build something that's low latency, that's really high fidelity, as high as we possibly can make it, and as glitch-free. And so we've replaced our entire infrastructure, and we built a whole brand new pipeline, a whole brand new structure all around improving that audio experience, about making audio sound really good.
What are the five things that, you know, when somebody gets beta 2, what are five homework projects you want them to try out to show off the system?
Show off or debug? Because
we can cover both.
In beta 2, we're hoping that we'll get a lot of sympathy and forgiveness and support, because we do frankly have some significant problems in the audio driver area, because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of diverse, divergent audio drivers that are probably in some of the Longhorn beta machines. So we want forgiveness, first of all, for the fact that right out of the box, if you do a clean install, you may not get your audio working right out of the box. Okay. Beyond that, though, we'd love to get feedback about people's experience with this device control, with low latency, with fidelity, and even indication about whether our core infrastructure that enables this high resilient playback of media, we want to find out if people's audio is actually dropping out or glitching when they launch another application. We also want to find out if, or we'd love to discover if, in fact, the pro audio community is actually happy with our new infrastructure so that we can finally, for the first time, give Sonic Foundry and Sony and our friends at Adobe Audition, our friends at Avid, and all of the companies out there, even Mackie and Traction. We want to make Windows an amazing platform for both authoring, editing, and eventually publishing and consuming media. And we're trying to put the little pieces in place in the platform to enable that for the first time so that they can, we can say, end-to-end, we're making our customers on the editing side and on the consuming side happy and giving them what they need.
One thing we haven't talked about yet is surround sound. As my home has 5 speakers now,
oh, yeah.
Right? And in fact, Bill Hill was even playing with surround sound as a way to do notifications, and he would put his email over his left ear and put another sound on his left, you know, left front. You know.
One thing I'll say is, and I can't talk about this too much, just to put a little intrigue into the PDC timeframe, we are working on integrating surround sound in a way where at least your Windows startup sound will be surround aware and multi-channel aware. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now.
All right.
However, also in our device infrastructure, we have native surround support and intelligence about how surround is used.
Exactly. I was just going to add that. Is that we've got it all. It's all built in there. I mean, we've been testing with surround bits on those of us who have audio adapters that can do multi-channel audio. We've been testing them throughout. I mean, it's fully functional. Actually, strange but true. Even in XP, you could actually do a WAV file that was multi-channel. Now, you couldn't do volume control and a lot of other things like that with it. You could play it back and it mostly worked. Well, now we're making the multi-channel stuff. It's a tier one scenario. It's very important to us to make sure that we've got really high quality, high fidelity surround sound. We also have scenarios around consumer electronics, SPDIF, audio receivers, things like that. Again, tier one, very important features for us to manage to include in that.
Okay.
We're collaborating with the Media Center team as well on a lot of the audio setup issues, making surround sound setup super easy. And in fact, Joe Belfiore was one of the biggest vocal advocates of our work in the early days of Media Center because he himself had trouble setting up his surround sound system for getting surround working in Media Center version 1 or Freestyle, as it was called back then. So we know there's a lot of pain around surround and how it's working. And frankly, I think there's another room for giant innovation around wireless speakers. Mm. One of the big problems you have today with surround sound, or I think an adoption blocker, is who wants to drill holes in their wall?
Yep.
Or hire the definitive audio guy to come
or
down?
Or I have wires across the carpet.
Yeah. Does your wife enjoy that too?
No.
Wireless speakers, and there's even MSR has a project with Tom Blank around IP-based speakers. I think there's a lot of innovation around both device rendering and capture in a way where you don't have to have this tether aside from a power cord. And if you could find somebody at Microsoft working on wireless power, I'd love to meet them too.
Yep.
But essentially, wireless speakers also are going to make sort of the surround scenarios much easier for normal people.
Yeah. By the way, I do want to make one thing clear, by the way, that may have come out. I don't run this team, okay?
Yeah.
Steve said Larry's team. Larry's team is me and one other developer, Steve Smith, who did the UI work. I did the plumbing, he did the UI. Okay, there's only two of us. The team is actually run by Noel Cross, who's walking down the hall. Here's Noel right now. He runs the audio team. I'm just a random person who happens to work on the audio team. And
you have Steve Palmer's here.
But it doesn't matter. That's completely irrelevant
Larry
to
has
whether or not.
A card from Bill and Steve.
Actually, I do.
Actually.
But that's irrelevant. It really isn't. It doesn't matter. Noel's the boss. Noel's the guy who's made all of this happen.
And if it doesn't work, you get all the blame.
And the credit, though. He deserves the credit. He's the one who's pushed us all to make this all work.
It's actually Noel and Noel's team. When I say Larry's team, I mean our team. But Noel is the dev manager for the new audio infrastructure.
And Noel has to eat lunch so can continue working.
Cool.
Noel's trying to get Beta 2 out the door.
Excellent. Yeah. What's the push like for your team, you know, going into Beta 2?
Hi, Daniel.
Noel, do you want to comment on that? How are we doing for getting our stuff into Beta 2?
It's been a struggle. It's been an uphill battle. We did a lot of work for Beta 1, and Beta 1 was very difficult, and then we said, oh, well, it's one of those types of things, you just forget the pain, and then you go and do it four times as hard again. So, so good thing that we've got plenty of time to finish up for the next year what we've gotten in there, and but I'm really excited about what the team's done. It's spectacular how much change that we've put into the into
what are you proudest of? What's one thing you're proudest of?
The one thing I'm most you know, I'm the most proud of how all of our features came together. You know, everyone went off and did their own thing. It all came together at the end. You know, everyone kind of like made sure their little piece fit together properly. In the past, we probably about 3 years ago, we were all off in our own silos, but now everyone just came together and fit these blocks together, and everything just kind of magically worked together. Because there's some foresight there, but there was also a lot of team cohesion, team coordination that made that happen.
So. It really was quite remarkable that we actually pulled this together. What was it? We decided to put everything together, and 2 days later, we started the process. And it was a long couple of days, but 2 days later we had a whole series of completely separate features perfectly integrated, and it was amazing because they all just worked together. You know, there was a lot of, it was work involved in making it happen, but it just worked.
Yeah.
And I was totally impressed because I didn't expect it to go as quickly as it did.
Same here. I would say probably Noel's answer in a slightly different way. We actually delivered a new class driver, an audio class driver called UAA, or the Universal Audio Architecture. Intel brands it as HD Audio, High Def Audio. We have a new class driver. On top of that, we have, as Larry mentioned, we have brand new APIs, user mode APIs that replaces the entire former kernel mode audio stack. And on top of that, these new user experiences. And one team delivering that whole piece end-to-end has been a little bit like, or feels like NASA around here sometimes when you look at the dependencies from all of our features way up at a very high architectural level dependent on a driver and IHVs with literally hundreds
of
cards.
What's an IHV again?
An independent hardware vendor.
Ah, okay.
The people who essentially create all of the value in our food chain, because our software runs essentially with and on their hardware.
So you're talking like about a Toshiba or a Dell or something?
Toshiba,
like
Dell, but also the Creative Labs of the world, and the even Intel, and all the big companies who make audio and video hardware are essentially our partners who make
What's
these.
The feedback from some of those companies about this new audio?
Pretty good. It's been a long and rough road with some of them because Longhorn has been in the planning process and in the shoot for so long that we've had, in some ways, the same meeting with some of our partners over 4 years, and we're finally, I'm pretty happy, and I would say the thing I'm proudest of is that we've actually delivered and done what we said we would do 4 years ago for some of these people. Even though you just saw Volume Control for the first time, Robert, half an hour ago, some of these people have been seeing our directorware and our chalkboard drawings about what's coming for years and years. So I'm super happy that we got through the Longhorn quality gates, Longhorn
basics. Tell me about those, because people on the outside don't understand what. In fact, I remember you left a party of mine to come back and work on reverse integration, right? And we've talked with Chris Jones about that process a little bit.
Well, essentially, one of the things that we realized a long time ago was that there was no way we could possibly ship Longhorn without applying some really serious engineering quality and enforcing engineering practices on every team in the company. And so the powers that be that run the Longhorn Shiproom defined a series of what are called quality gates. There's quality gates around performance, around localization, manageability, all sorts of aspects, security, all the aspects of the operating system. There's a series of quality gates. These are bars that you have to meet. So you have to make sure that, for instance, you don't increase the boot time of Windows. Something I actually happen to be working on right now is an issue involved that. But you have to work on making sure you don't increase the boot time of Windows, making sure that that stays fast as possible. You don't have to add new processes to the system that they don't know about. That you make sure that you don't, that you have specs for every piece of the code that goes in. Test, development, PM specs, the whole raft of specs involved, that you have a security model for every single feature, no matter how insignificant, it's got to have a threat model. It has to be quality. There are quality gates involving performance optimizations that are put in, that are enabled in the code, and each feature has its own set of perf metrics associated with it, and you've got to make sure you meet all of those perf metrics. And there's a whole raft of different ones: localization, globalization, making sure that you're not geopolitical correctness, where you're not stepping on other nations' toes. That's a huge hot button issue that can cause massive amounts of grief. So we have to make sure there's a quality gate associated with making sure that no code ever makes it in to the main Windows branch, the mainline version of Windows, that doesn't meet that quality. So whenever your code goes into Windows, it is of sufficient quality that 6 months later, you could turn the crank and put it out the door. Right. That's the bar. The bar is, from 6 months from today, we can ship this code and it'll hit on user shelves and they'll be able to run this. Yeah. And that's a really hard bar to make.
Speaking of quality gates, Steve Smith has joined us. Steve Smith is a developer who built the UI of the volume control you saw a couple minutes ago. Steve is single-handedly responsible for making sure that UI meets our quality gates as well as gets through the LimeWare basics. And,
very cool.
Steve's been on our team for a couple years.
That was really impressive. Yep. So
cool. Thank you.
Steve has a long history also of shipping UI in the whole digital image suite, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm.
We use that for our Channel 9.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so, yeah, Steve's responsible.
How we crop our pictures for Channel 9.
Excellent.
Anything you want to tell developers about the new audio that they need to know about it?
Oh, that's a good question.
You're probably better answer that than I could.
Okay. What to tell developers? Hopefully nothing changes. That it is really, truly our intent that if you're using the existing APIs, that your experience won't be degraded significantly.
I'll take a quick crack at that, though. I think we do have some new low-level APIs available for audio application developers if they wish or choose to build on them. What we don't want to do is open them up to the world and say, oh, this is how everyone should deal with audio in Windows.
Okay.
Because, for instance, somebody making a pro audio app who cares about low latency so that when you hit the keyboard and something going off and eventually getting up to a software synthesizer somewhere in Windows, we want to make sure there's a very fast, simple path for them to get to play that sample back and have it come out your speakers within a reasonable amount of 4 milliseconds or so. What we don't want to do is have every SQL app on the planet or every person writing just a generic Windows app thinking they have to deal with this low-level, bare-bones access to the hardware API to play a sound.
Got it.
And so we have to do some crafting and work on our messaging so that we actually make it clear that there's a persona or a person who we're targeting this low-level API for. There's also a higher-level API within Media Foundation, which we won't even go into the details of that. And there's a very, very high-level set of tools people would use if they just want to play a system sound.
Right.
And so we'll be able to do some evangelism as well as some publicity around our APIs during PDC and in one-on-ones with customers who need to.
Well,
I
thanks.
Have to excuse myself,
hey, no problem. Thanks for introducing me to your team and showing me the cool stuff you guys have been working on for a few years. So it's really impressive, and I hope
really these guys are the stars. I'm just the loudmouth who sometimes shows it off. So
there are lots of stars. Okay, yeah. This is not just Steve and I. There are a half dozen other developers who've worked and sweated buckets, and they have worked their fingers to the bone on the keyboards to make this thing happen. And it's like just saying these are the stars.
Yeah,
we're just two guys. On
even
the
people
team.
Who've left their team: Martin Preyer, Steve Swenson, Frank Barrett,
Albert
Selchuk. There's a number of people whose names we could do a long list of credits, and been a lot of contributors to this project over the years. So,
well, thank you very much.
Yeah, our pleasure. See you for the video version of this
thanks.
In a couple months.
Bye.